All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Drexel Basketball Podcast, second episode this week. Tonight, we're going to focus on the basketball over the weekend. I didn't want to miss an opportunity to talk about three wins, because for the men's team, two wins in a row. So got to take advantage of that for sure. But before we do that, Dan in particular wanted to talk about our conversation yesterday with Robert Battle. Really enjoyed it. Great insight from him. Dan, what did you want to pass along as far as that goes?
Yeah, besides he was a great guest and we've got nothing but great feedback on his appearance there. I was struck by how sharp his memory was as far as individual plays and games 20 years ago, right? Like I thought that was just super cool. But you look at a guy who kind of brings that kind of, you know, intelligence and intellect and work ethic that he has and he's talked about and kind of how well he picks up on people. When we talked about the coaching strategies, how, you know, he talked about dealing with each player individually and everything, and not being a Bruiser Flint anymore, right? That kind of days behind, he recognized that. And I was really, really impressed by it. He's a guy like, I want to buy stock in his retirement here. I don't know what he's going to do next, but like, that's, I think when you talk about just intelligence and work ethic to begin with, but then the ability to deal with people, you talk about a real leader and anything he's going to do. And that was just really cool, I think, to have that time with him. So I really want to appreciate and say thank you for him to come in and say, if you haven't listened to that pod, please go ahead and help yourself out by doing it, because I just felt great at the end of it.
Yeah, you made that happen, so thanks for doing that. I should take a step back. Of course, I'm Nate. I'm going to go left to right, so I'm fair. Eric here, Dan, and then Bill, welcome. First time being here to just talk about the team, so thanks for coming. I hope I wasn't kissing his butt too much, but I mean it. You know what I mean? Like, and like I said to him, every Drexel team past that, I've kind of, who's the Robert Battle on this team? Who's the guy, like you said, the blue collar work ethic guy and leader of the team? Cause that's all I know. He's the first Drexel. That's the first team I remember and the first player like that. So you always were looking for that player. And even this team, I'm looking for who that player is. So, it was excellent. So, anybody else thoughts of that conversation the other night?
Yeah, I mean, the thoughts on leader, that's perfect, because I think the guy, I don't know if he's looking for a career in coaching, but I think he definitely has a possibility to do that at a high school or college level. I just think he has a lot of patience and he has the smarts to do it. He's a student of the game. Here's a guy who's been overlooked, sort of reminds me of Malik Rose in a way, who's overlooked by everyone. Mm-hmm. Here's a guy, you know, Bruiser Flint didn't want him. Division One didn't want him. Proved everybody wrong. Worked hard. Student of the game. I think it was between the sophomore and junior year was where he picked up, got more playing time, and all of a sudden he became a world beater overnight. Mm-hmm. So he's definitely a good standard bearer for men's Drexel basketball.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I was sitting there thinking, especially when I think Dan, you asked the question about. With these days with the kids the players wanting to transfer and the way he's, you know, how do you handle that and how he said, you know, you learn every kid individually and kind of figure out what their trigger is, you know, whether it's, you know, you want to play professionally or you want to make a living out of this. And I was sitting there like, man, this guy should coach. So, you know, who knows what he does, but not. And exactly like you said, it's sharpness that he remembers. I feel like I have pretty good memory of games, but man, I mean, the players he named, and you know, you want to just sit there and ask about all the games, and who knows what the next conversation is going to be like. But yeah, that was excellent. So,
and you guys talk about, you know, we're not big X's and O's guys here. Bill, you're probably stronger than the three of us, but you know, the way he has seen three Drexel games this year, he said, and I thought he nailed it on every player he talked about. Now, him agreeing with me may not be great for him, but I just thought he was just right on it with everything he saw from Amari, what he saw with Malik when he talked about playing within the system. We've seen Malik since that William & Mary game much more in sync with kind of the rest of his teammates, and it's been kind of proven out in the box score. He just eyeballing guys. He didn't know Malik Barnes' name. You gave him a number, and he had him called out, you know, instantaneously. He had the full read on him. Like, it was super impressive to me. So, yeah, I think from a coaching perspective, that'd be a great thing. But really, again, you put those skills together, work ethic and intelligence, and you can do a lot. Mm-hmm. Well beyond coaching, but you can do a lot. So, hat tip, but we'll have him back. I know he was excited to talk about the rest of his career, which is great, and I look forward to sharing that. But if you didn't hear the first part, make sure you hear that first part because that was great.
Yeah, have your kids listen to it too. Go ahead. Sorry, Bill. What are you saying?
That's okay. There were so many tidbits in there that, like, I don't know. We'd never know if we didn't talk to him. Like he mentioned Malik Rose's brother was on the team at one point. I didn't even know that. I had no idea. So that was interesting. And just, you know, all the stuff about his recruitment. But also he wants to work with Amari, it sounded like, or he's willing to. So I don't know if Spike or anyone on the coaching staff is listening, but make that happen. I mean, if you get Amari in there with Robert Battle, that's really going to help him out.
I thought his talk about decommitting too, and the fact that it wasn't Brew but Tony Kamara. So now who knows if Brew talked to Tony? But if anybody knew Tony Kamara back then, like not just a basketball fan, but just a guy who was a fan of every student at Drexel University. There's a reason there's a dorm named after him now, and the fact that he took the interest in Robert, again, just another kind of we had it really good back then. I mean, maybe they didn't realize it, but it's a good. It's a great story. It's a great off the court story to hear.
Yeah, it sounded like
same trajectory as Battle in a way. And here was a guy who wasn't really recruited much coming out of high school. This time's a little bit different because he's come from overseas, but he's coming with raw talent. Didn't play much at all in his first year, just like Battle, and same size practically, maybe a little bit taller. But he picked up his aggressiveness over a period of time, and we all say that. That Amari needs to pick up his aggressiveness a little bit. Just needs a little bit more of that fire, but he's got the position, he's got the hands.
And he made a comedy practice with what Cam and James. So yeah, I agree. Let's get him in the gym with Amari and see what he can do with the rest of this group. So, great conversation, and we'll see how it goes if we can bring him back. So we'll lead in. So Thursday night, Drexel at William and Mary. And won the game 72-57. I'll give my brief summary and then throw it to you guys and see what you think. Game we controlled for the most part. We led 34-24 at halftime. And, over the weekend, I felt like we started to show sort of that balanced attack. You know, I think out of curiosity, a week or so ago, I looked at the box scores from the CAA tournament last year just to see what we looked like. And really it was like a team effort. We had multiple guys in double figures. And so on Thursday night, we had five players in double figures, Martin, Bell, Winter, Odin, and Brown. And I really thought the big story of the first half was Odin. He had 13 points. He was 3 of 4 from 3-point range. Something maybe to talk about in a minute. He actually really didn't play in the second half. He only played 14 minutes for the whole game and 5 in the second half. But when he had the opportunity in the first half, he was terrific. And nice to see that out of him because he hasn't been as much of a factor here in the last number of games. We're controlling the game. And then, of course, I think the big story of the game was Cam jumping over the scorer's table and didn't really know whether he had a head injury or it turned out to be a leg injury. We'll talk as far as him playing on Saturday too. But I thought Trey Brown came in and he had one turnover, but scored 11 points, 4 of 6 shooting, did a really nice job getting to the basket. And actually, I think because William and Mary made a run at us, I think they got within about 5. But then, we did a nice job of getting to the rim. I think, Brown had a layup, then I think it was Martin, and then Bell followed him. And before you knew it, we were back up double figures and pretty much back in business. So, I know William Mary's a bad team, but we've had some devastating losses down there in the past. So it was nice to go down there and really dominate a team on the road. So what do you guys think about Thursday in that game?
Yeah, I think kind of the Allen Boston revenge game, right? The weaker team came into our gym and beat us, and our guys were amped up to go back in there. And then you have them coming off of that Charleston game, which had to be disappointing. My guess is they stayed on the road all week, so they were thinking about nothing but basketball all week. I mean, they should have been pretty locked in going into that one. And you saw it. I mean, they didn't shoot the ball particularly well outside of Odin. And to Bill goes later. He got the Chris Fouch treatment. He made too many baskets. He had to sit. So I don't know what was going on there. But I'll take a minute on the Cam entry. It was apparently a bad cut to the leg. And because it was a bad cut, a lot of blood. And that's why they got him out of there. I think he did stay in the area overnight and had to, you know, he didn't travel with the team after that, but obviously made it to Elon. So obviously the x-rays are negative. You know, it seems he seems fine. Played very well at Elon. We'll get there. But, you know, I do think the dude's got a lawsuit against William. Like, there's no reason for some of those tables to be there. I've sat there. It's media seating and then 30 extra seats in case 30 extra media members spontaneously show up to Drexel, William & Mary on a Thursday night. Like, there's just no reason for those tables to be there. And they're very close to the court. And he clearly landed on something very sharp that should not have been there. So I put William & Mary and their administration really largely at fault for this. And I'm kind of pissed about it.
I take it where for I was nice to see the hustle that, you know, that for me was, you know, I made a comment. I'm not that I don't think he's capable of hustling, but you know, everyone, you know, on the message board, I felt was kind of down on things the following morning. And it reminded me, I think compared it to when Carson Wentz got hurt and everyone's like, oh man, the season's over or whatever. And you got to stick with it. I don't know what he hit when he went around the other side. It didn't seem like the setup is too different from other places. So, I mean, that's a separate issue, but
you don't usually see those tables the length of the court. But yeah, I mean, when those tables are at center court, how many balls go over the center court? You know, out of bounds of center court is not that often. But when you go towards the baseline like that, they're on the length of the floor there, William & Mary. Mm-hmm. And clearly, like I said, there was something behind that table that shouldn't have been there. So, again, frustrating for me to see that happen, and obviously would have been a tough experience for our season. It's really great to see that he bounced back, but also great to see his teammates. You know, they took a shot right after he left the game, but Trey Brown especially, I thought, really shined pretty well. He took that opportunity. So fun to see kind of the team rally and make sure that they finished putting the knife into William & Mary and getting that revenge that they needed to get. And that was a big, you know, listen, William & Mary ain't great, but road wins are road wins, right? So nice one to get.
And that's why you bring Trey Brown in, right? Like, we haven't had a backup to Cam, and it feels like forever. Like, every year it seems like it's Cam and no one behind him, or you're just running someone for a couple minutes so that it's not a disaster. So Trey Brown actually came in, gave us really good minutes. That game's a lot closer, at least, if he doesn't perform the way that he did. And hopefully it's a confidence booster for him, too. Like, I feel like he got some minutes for the first time in a while. He's still only averaging like 4 or 5 minutes behind Cam on average. Maybe he plays a little bit with them here and there. But, you know, getting in there and having to be more aggressive, I think, could be helpful for him in the long run. And to touch on that Odin point earlier, I said this on the boards too. Like, why on earth is this man hitting, 4 for 5 from 3 in the first half? And then he sits for the first 11 minutes in the second half? That makes no sense to me. Start him, or at least bring him in like 2 minutes or something. Like, the guy's hot. Like, get him the ball and see what he does. I've noticed this a couple times over the course of this season where one guy has really been on fire and then we don't seem to get him the ball again in the second half. I remember specifically Coltrane in another game. I think he was like, 4 for 6 or something, or 3 for 5. I don't know, something.
UNC Wilmington, lines. I bet, was probably the game you're thinking
of. Yeah, there
of.
You go. Yeah. And then he just didn't shoot in the second half. I just don't understand why we can't. I mean, this one, it didn't matter. But I feel like if a guy's got a hot hand, you should try to feed him as much as you can, at least until he cools off.
Yeah, no, it just seems like certain guys play certain times, and that's it. And that's why we lost to Charleston. But I was so happy because Coltrane had a big first half and it seemed like we continued to get him looks. And I was like, thank God. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, exactly. You have a hot player, get him the ball. So so who knows? But
I'd like to see Coltrane get more involved. He played 30 minutes. He only had 3 3-pointers, attempted, made one, took one shot from inside the perimeter. And that was about it. Didn't really contribute terribly much. He's an okay defensive player, but I like I've been saying, out of that position, we need to get more production out of him. And I'm hoping in his junior year, we're going to see more of it.
I think in general, from like the 2/3, we kind of lack a gun. We have a bunch of guys that will shoot it if the shot's there, but we don't have someone that just like aggressively hunts that shot, especially from 3. I mean,
or can make their own shot.
What's that?
You know, it's all spot ups. It's all off of passes. It's all spot ups. It's nobody's making their own shot at the 2 or 3 in our offense.
For sure. But even if you can
X can get to the rim at least. But
yeah, no, that's a little bit different. He can get in there. I mean, But for the rest of the guys, like, even if they can't get their own shot, like, you got to be a little bit more creative, I think, at getting them that those looks. So I don't know. Hopefully we can do that going forward. But we're shooting some of the highest. I think we're the highest percentage team in the conference, right, from three. And I don't almost don't feel like at times we're shooting enough or getting the ball in the right guy's hands.
Yeah, we're still number one in the conference for 3-point shooting. But I would tell you the last six games, I think I'll pull it up now. But I don't think we've shot better than 32% only once, which was actually the loss to Charleston. So I was going to talk about this later, but really tremendously cold shooting team. I mean, they wanted Elon shooting 16% from three. So it's not the live by the three, die by the three dragons anymore, which is good. But for as good as they were early in conference play, they're just not doing it right now. They're not stroking the ball real well. Still won four of their last six. So if things come together, right, this is a little hint of things to come.
The Okurus is there. Actually, statistically, isn't Odin the second in the conference in 3-point shooting percentage? But really, they do miss Okurus. He didn't play either game. And, you know, that's his specialty. And with his improved defense this year, not that he's great, but got a lot better. He's not a bad sized guy. He's kind of long. Definitely miss him.
Yeah. There's a question coming up. Yeah. Again, how much of this is coaching not getting and helping us to create the looks versus are the players not, you know, looking for their shot? I don't know the answer to that question, but yeah, I feel that way too. It's like, I feel like, you know, if at last I looked, you know, we're pretty low as far as attempts go. So we shoot a high percentage, but we had a few games like at hand that we had to catch up on. So are we just not doing a good job getting looks, or do guys need to be more assertive to look for their shot? Or it's both. I don't know. But I do want to point out too, Amari Williams had a big second half. He had 9 points. And that was the frustrating thing with the first game, the way that White really kind of took it to us in the post. And, you know, Amari had a really good second half. So really nice that, again, the way we responded with everything that went on. So, okay. All right. Anything else from that game you guys wanted to talk about or anything? Okay. So, yeah, nice win for us. And again, even though it's William and Mary, hey, you know, you take a nice win where you're up double figures most of the game. So, so then we go to Elon on Saturday, and then I guess this may sound strange, but like, I mean, we were down at the game sitting behind the bench, and I guess I was still kind of like, ooh, I'm right behind the bench, so I was kind of distracted at times of what was actually going on the floor, plus trying to take pictures and do some other stuff, but bottom line is, I mean, another balanced game. So if I had it right, we had Washington, Martin, Bell, Winter, Williams, all were in double figures again. Butler had 7 and Brown had 6. So again, we had a lot of guys chipping in. We had points coming from a lot of different directions. They had it coming from one direction. I didn't even realize the game at Burford, if I'm saying that right, was having. He came off the bench and scored 31 points. And then Graham, who killed us in the first game, he only had 8. But they had one guy light us up. But I think, Dan, like you just mentioned, man, it was a horrible shooting game. And Elon in particular, I mean, they finished, I think, 18% from three-point range. But I felt like every time I looked up, they were even lower than that. I think they hit a few right at the end that made their percentage look a little bit better. And they shot 32% from the game as a team. So, you know, bottom line is Elon shot horrible, but we were able to get points from enough different directions and built a nice lead. So we were up where I have somewhere of our largest lead, but we were up like we led by as many as 22 points with 11 minutes to go in the first half, and kind of struggled at the end. Like I said, it made it a little bit closer towards the end. We were 1 for our last 11, and then we struggled from the free throw line at the end too, and Elon started fouling like really, really early. I want to say with like 2 minutes left, we finished 21 to 30 from the line. So it sort of opened the door. The game really was never in doubt. Elon seemed to think it was. But bottom line is really a dominating win from start to finish. And really aside from the rebounding, that was an area that we really struggled with. And the coaches were trying to really kind of harp on the players like, hey, we got to do a better job on the glass. But overall, dominating win. We took advantage of their poor shooting and won two straight. So what thoughts do you guys have about Saturday? Anything you picked up on?
I mean, I think you covered a lot of it right there, Nate. The one thing I've noticed with Amari, not only this game, but the last couple games, he's doing a better job of not jumping for every single thing that comes in the lane. He's kind of just being there sometimes and backing off, which is enough a lot of the times. Like, people will just be dissuaded by him even in the lane. So I think like him not going for every block probably allowed him to not get beat on the boards so badly this in this game. But he's a presence, no matter if he goes for it or not. But yeah, overall, I mean, I was impressed with like Cam. I mean, I wasn't even none of us were expecting him to play, I don't think, and he just came in and you know, he didn't have his greatest game ever, but coming back off what we thought was maybe a season-ending injury, and the guy plays, you know, 34 minutes. And we got the win. So, I mean, no complaints there. He's a warrior.
I'm surprised Cam went as much as he did. You know, I think your point, Bill, is well taken. We're currently, I think, Drexel's 10th in the conference in offensive rebounding and 7th in defensive rebounding. So I know we talked a lot about him trying to block the shot so much and ending up out of position, but we're 10th in offensive rebounding. So at some point, we're just a bad rebounding team. So, you know, the guards got to help out a little bit more. Malik does okay when he's on the floor, but when Malik's not on the floor, we're really a lost cause. And you need, you know, we can't be this poor. It's the weakest part of the game for sure for this team right now, and I'd really like to see this week the staff concentrate on that with two games where, it's going to be important, especially with UNCW, because they've got some bodies. So, you know, on Thursday, we'll be looking for that, because I think it's a critical issue. And we've talked, Nate, about Amari's got to be stronger. Use two hands on the ball. There were a couple of rebounds I thought William and Mary that, you know, he lost that shouldn't have been lost. But he just needs more help, too.
Yeah. What do you think, Eric?
Offensive rebounds, you said it, Dan. 18 for Elon, 5 for Drexel. Elon's not a big team. Drexel's bigger, arguably more athletic, but that's hustle to me. They weren't getting to the boards in that game.
What's the thing you said, hustle? There's one play that stood out for me. It was a rebound came off the glass. Malik was standing in the lane, and he's a guy, if I think of a hustle player, he's one of the guys that comes to mind. But for some reason, he didn't go get the ball. And, I mean, it was one of the few parts of that game where a coach really got on a player. And I'm just sitting there like, why didn't he go get the ball? So there's some situations like that. I feel like the rebounds are there for the taking. For some reason, we just don't go after it. I don't know. But
maybe we became so reliant on JB that he's not there just sucking up all the rebounds that it made the rest of the team a little bit weaker. I mean, last year, I think we had, you know, Bickerstaff was a pretty good rebounder too. So he was pulling in a decent amount, but I mean, between JB getting hurt and him leaving, there seems to be this is a bigger problem than we've usually had over the course of the last couple of years, at least when we had JB.
I want to say, you know, Butler's turning a little bit of a corner. Like, again, I thought he had a better game on Saturday, and I guess weaker opponents, but yeah, you'd love to throw him in there and be like, he's going to take care of the glass. So hopefully a role for him. We didn't have him, you know, play with the back to the basket as much, but you hope that we see good things out of him this week. So, yeah. All right. Anything else on the Elon game? So I have us, again, we had, so it's two straight wins. So I have us 14-12 overall and then 9-7 in the conference. By my math, hopefully I got it right. We're alone in fifth place, two games up on Charleston, and then a game back of Delaware. So looks like we're, you know, mid-pack is, I mean, it could work out in this conference. So we'll see how things shake out. So I guess we'll take a moment this weekend. So we have two home games, including Senior Day. And now why am I blanking on who we play? We got UNCW Thursday, and then we have Charleston on Saturday. So any thoughts going into the weekend you guys have?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because you're kind of locked into the 4-5 game. You know, I think what you just said there, Nate. So there's not a whole lot we can do other than, you know, help UNCW be the one seed if you so desire. And as I don't think that they're going to play for that. I think that they're going to play UNCW as hard as they can. So you're going to go out there, you're going to play basketball. Like I say, I'll be looking at the rebounding. And that's about it. You know, senior night is historically always a tough night for teams to play. We've got a lot of guys who this will be their last college basketball game. It's going to be a very emotional day. I was going through that earlier. You know, Butler's definitely gone. I'm sorry, Malik's definitely gone. You would have to imagine JB is gone. Cam and House, Urich, and Trey Brown all have a year of eligibility left, technically. I don't think anybody expects to see Cam or Urich back. I don't really expect to see House back. We'll see. Obviously, he got the scholarship this week, which is exciting and great.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. That was a cool video. They posted to Facebook. So
Trey Brown's the interesting name to me. I want to see if he's out there for senior night, or if he might be coming back, because we talk about him getting an opportunity to play the point. You know, next year could be it. We're going to have a freshman coming in. You wouldn't mind having a senior on the roster. Mm-hmm. Let him split it up. So that's going to be an interesting thing. But yeah, senior night's a big deal. I hope people get it the day. I hope people honor all of these guys, but you know, certainly Cam and JB, who kind of turned this program around. You know, they're all great support. So it's going to be a tough game. Charleston's not an easy matchup for us, and it's going to be an emotional game. Like I say, senior games historically, just in college basketball, don't go well for the home team for whatever reason. So I view that as a tougher matchup than you think. But I'm just looking forward to seeing these guys play the DAC one last time.
Anyway, why you bring that up? I know I mentioned I had the unpopular opinion after Cam got hurt, which, by the way, you could debate whether he should have played Saturday. I'm glad it showed a lot of leadership going out there and playing, but you could tell he wasn't 100%. And I was actually kind of interested to see the team with Trey Brown as a point guard. So not saying he's going to take his job, but just to say again, to talk people off the cliff, so to speak, if, you know, it looks like Cam's good, but I think I agree with you. I think I like what I've seen out of Trey Brown. So that's just me. But any other thoughts you guys have, Eric, Bill, anything you're wondering about this weekend?
No, I mean, I'm hoping we get at least one of them. I don't know if we need it. I think it looked like in the standings that Charleston could maybe overtake us, but I don't know all the tiebreakers and such. So I'd like to at least get one of them, if not both. I mean, it would be nice to carry some momentum in the tournament, show we can win, you know, multiple games in a row. What is this, our longest win streak of the year at two? So getting to four would be nice going into the tournament, build a lot of confidence, have close to a full-strength team. I don't know if Okros is going to be back, but other than that, we've got, you know, most of our players ready to go. So let's just hope we build that on that momentum and get a couple wins.
Yeah, I guess that's, you know, in how balanced we were, you know, this past weekend. And like I said, comparing it to some of the box scores from last year, it's like getting guys to fill into the roles, you know, like, so, you know, you take Bell, you know, getting to the rim, but being under control when doing it, you know, getting Coltrane Washington open threes. You know, we've seen Malik Martin has this new part of his game, and it's interesting what Robert Battle was saying about him being kind of out of control. But I think one way to use that is to get him to get some steals and get out in transition. He's done that the last few games, and we've been doing better in transition points after all year, really not being able to create some easy baskets. So, and then having Amari Williams, you know, when you need to throw the ball down inside, he can convert. So it's like seeing some signs of us filling our roles and being consistent in filling those roles. And then Coach Spiker, you know, putting those guys, yeah, if there's a guy that you can really exploit, feed him the ball. So that's where he's got to come in with Odin, you know, leave him in there. Let him prove he's not going to do the same thing in the second half that he did in the first half. So that's what I'm looking for, to kind of see that kind of continue from last weekend. So, yeah, I agree with you, Dan. I don't know if we'll make it down. We'll see. We've been doing a lot of back and forth to Philly and then making plans to go to maybe D.C. We'll see how that works. So, believe it or not, take it a little easy this weekend. But yeah, if anybody can get down there. So, all right. And anything else? I'll go through the women, but anything else, you guys, men's-wise, you know, things you wanted to throw out there?
No, just go into this, into the postseason healthy, going with a little bit of momentum, you know, play hard, but don't try to kill yourself on the scorer's table, but be top six. I think, you know, you finish top six and you're playing well, it's going to take care of itself regardless of who the matchups are. Last year, the matchups we thought were a big deal. Didn't really matter. He ended up playing a relatively weak Alon in the final. You just don't know who's going to catch fire come that week. It's one and done.
Yeah, surprised me. Delaware is, what, 10-5 in conference? I mean, I haven't been that impressed, so I was surprised to see that. So, yeah, I agree. It's up for the taking. So, yeah, we'll see what happens this weekend. But, all right, so we'll go through the women's game. So, and very nice to have Eric down there with us. By the way, and you watched the end of the game, right, from the top of the
– Absolutely. I wasn't going to walk out of that one. That was something else.
Because, of course, yeah, there's a woman maybe like a row down from us in a Delaware sweatshirt who gets up and leaves with like 10 seconds, whenever that lap, I think when Hannah went to shoot. And I first thing I said to my wife and my kids, I'm like, I can't believe she's leaving right now. And then you got up and stood up. And I'm like, wait a minute.
There were maybe 1,800 people there. I had to make sure. I know the parking lot gets ugly and I had to get out of there. I know down in Delaware, you know, you got those early bird specials. I thought for sure I was really going to be behind the trap. And, if you know, I'm going to get stuck behind a 75-year-old at a red light. I'm in trouble. I'm not getting home when I needed to be.
You went to some concert, right? Where did you go?
I went to see Howard Jones.
Okay.
My favorite 80s groups up in Sellersville Theater. If you ever get a chance to go there, it's a great place to see a show. There's not a bad seat in the house, about 300 people.
Okay.
You have to have a vax card to get in. So, relatively okay. Safe, but nothing's
so you had a good excuse. So now, yeah, no, but yeah, no, but I hope you enjoyed it. Cause I know I did. So, and try to give the Reader's Digest. So we dominated this game early. It was 21-9 after the first quarter. I made the comment, this was our team hitting on all cylinders. Cause you know, Brugler had 5 of her 9 points in the first quarter. Keyshawn Washington had 10 points on 5 of 8 shooting. I think Hannah had 4 points. So we shot 62% in the first quarter, defended well, and it's about as well as we played all season. And then, you know, second quarter was kind of even, I would say. And then came out in the second half, more of the same. We were 47-32 with 5 minutes to go in the third quarter. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, are we really going to blow this team out? Like, and is this kind of the game we've been waiting for? Like, you know, not only are we the best team in the conference, but are we even like a notch above? But give Delaware credit. They fought back. They started bombing away from threes. Skinner, she was 2 of 4 in the third quarter. She had 8 points. And then that kind of triggered them. And the same thing that showed up, speaking of rebounding with the men's team, the second half of the first meeting, Delaware really hit the offensive glass, and they did the same thing starting in the third quarter, then moving over into the fourth quarter. So, they outrebounded us on the offensive glass was 20-9, and then second chance points was 21-9 in favor of Delaware. So before you know it, you look up on the scoreboard, and actually Delaware had a 3-point lead at one point. But then Dan, to steal a line that you used, you know, about we were talking about Cam a couple weeks ago. Then the Stars came out in the fourth quarter, and it was kind of the Jasmine Dickey versus Keyshawna Washington show. I mean, Taylor Battle was in there too, but. Keyshawna, I'll give Jasmine Dickey had 10 points on 4 of 6, but Keyshawna had 14 points on 6 of 7 shooting, and was just drilling all those mid-range jump shots, every one that she got. So we hit 5 of our last 7 shots, and just found a way, like this team always does. This was a little different in the fact that we had the lead and we didn't have to come back, but you know, just Keyshawna doing what she does. She was rightfully named the CA Player of the Week this week. So we still have that characteristic. We're trying to do everything we can to lose. Hannah went to the line with 2 free throws with about, I guess it was about 8 seconds left. When we were up by 1, would have put us up by 3, and she missed both, which was kind of shocking. And then Delaware had a possession to win the game, but defended well. Jasmine Dickey really likes that mid-range jump shot. I think we decided she wasn't going to beat us with that. And they got kind of a prayer jump shot, which they miss, and we won the game. So, so we're now 21-3 overall. We're 13-1 in the conference. And by my math, which I kind of suck at, but I think our magic number is 3. So basically, you know, we have a 2-game lead on Delaware essentially, and Towson's sitting there. So, kind of in the driver's seat for the number 1 seed. So, anybody, I know Eric, obviously you were there. What do you think about the game? Any thoughts you had?
Very impressive. I like the flow of play. I like the fact you're not subbing people out every 20 seconds. You know, they got the really, you know, the four big players out there. You know, you look at Nihil, you look at Washington, they're very small, and they don't look, you know, they're not, you know, muscular in any way, but they know how to play the game. I mean, you see a lot of confidence when Nihil has the ball. I've never seen a Drexel player with such confidence behind the ball. She's really amazing. 5'3". I'm very impressed. And Washington, she just was consistent throughout the game. She had no fear. She had that great baseline jumper. I think that was the difference in the game late with about 40 or 50 seconds left. She hit that baseline jumper. And that was it. You know, Delaware just had no answers for her. As great as Dickey played, she was, you know, very impressive, 22 points. But I think Washington's points were, I couldn't believe she had 32 points. It was pretty impressive. But I think, you know, you got a lot of experience out on the floor. And I think with the experience they had in the tournament last year, if they get back to the NCAA tournament, I hope they take that loss from last year and take it to their advantage this year.
Yeah, I'm always happy to hear Eric or somebody, you know, in his shoes talk about this, because Nate, you and I have been going to these women's games for, you know, just outside of 20 years now. But to have somebody who doesn't necessarily see the women on a regular basis coming out to go to a game and say, oh, wow, like, you know, I'm used to watching men's basketball. I just watched this women's team, and it was fun, man. That was a good time. Like, that excites me about our basketball team this year, because I think the women play both a brand of basketball and a talented enough version of basketball to make it fun. And it is. It's a guard-driven game where with Hannah and Kishana, where there's just a lot of speed. So it helps, you know, really, translate. I thought the front court disappointed me a little bit in this game. I actually thought Jasmine Valentine would play a bigger role, and she seemed to get out-muscled a couple times. That Delaware front court, I mean, they're a tall team. They're a tall and long team for sure. Mm-hmm. And then, but I thought our front court really struggled. I only saw four people score for Drexel in that game. Mm-hmm. You go into the number one, you know, tied for first team on the road, rivalry game, only have four people score. You're not going to win a lot. They didn't have a three until like the fourth quarter, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, all of that working against you. Like, they were just playing so well in every other phase of the game, and their stars, you know, they were there. They shined. I mean, Keyshawn and Hannah both. I mean, there was no answers. I think Battle put it best. Again, this is what amazed me with him. He saw her like 2 years ago, one time, and he was like, "This girl's trouble," and she was trouble. She was the best player on the court. And Jasmine Dickey, it bugs me that she didn't take that shot. If I'm a Delaware fan, simply because we could triple team her all we want. Nobody's got the size. Like, she just was shooting over us all night. So why exactly on that last play would she not pull that trigger? You know, I thank her for it. As a Drexel fan, I think Hannah Nihil really thanks her for it, because she got bailed out a little bit, despite having an excellent game. It actually reminded me of the men's team at Buffalo in the Sean Brooks era. This is like 04 or so in the NIT, where Bashir Mason got hurt in the last game of the CAA tournament, and Jeremiah King had to go 40 minutes. And then the game went to overtime, and Jeremiah King had to go 45 minutes. And it was like he played the best game of his life. He was just totally spent. Mm. And it sent him to the free throw line, and he came up empty, and the team lost the game on it. And I've never felt for a Drexel basketball player more than I felt for Jeremiah that day. Like, I it's a vivid memory for me. Mm. And with Hannah missing those shots, I had that flashback, and I'm really, really happy that it didn't go that way. So good for them. It was just a team win. I know only four people scored, but everybody had a piece of it, and certainly, you know, for all of the I don't think the forwards had a great game, but they defended well. Battle got hers, and Dickey got hers, but they didn't go crazy. They didn't go crazy. I think Dickey had like 22 points on 22 shots. That's the key. She wasn't efficient. I think Shana had like 30 something on 22 shots, and that's the difference in the game. You know, I mean, it was just our star outplayed theirs. Mm. Period. You know, it's great.
Yeah, I'm trying to reserve. I'm not trying not to jinx, but you mentioned Dickey not taking that shot at the end, and I'm trying to say to them, then they played this way possible, so there's not any jinx in the future. And I guess the best thing I could say, I think Keyshawn Washington proved why she's Conference Player of the Year on Sunday. Now, hopefully, that she proves she can be Conference Tournament Player of the Year, because that's what really matters. But try to put it in a positive instead of a negative. And yeah, it's just, it's just and it's just, you mentioned as far as Eric enjoying the game. I mean, and we were talking before we came on, you know, about at-large bids and stuff. I hate those conversations, but you feel bad for this team. I mean, they've been incredible to watch, and you hate to see again one bad game, and you know they don't get the reward they deserve. But I completely forgot the James Madison game. I'm sitting here like, holy crap, we played a really exciting game on Wednesday night. And I guess that kind of fit in with, you know, they came off last weekend winning, and then you're looking forward to Delaware. And I was like, wait a minute, we're playing James Madison in the middle. And I'll be brief on that. I mean, you know, what I'm going to do, I'm going to talk about one play of that game where it showed, and you talked about the size of Drexel, how small we are, but you know, Hannah Nihil goes in, rips out an offensive rebound with like a minute left, and then kicks it out to Keyshawn Washington, who drills a three. So, you know, again, it's just, it was playmaking, it was hustle, it was, you know, a star player making a big shot, and that's why they have the record they are. So, you know, Jamie, you had us in trouble. They zoned us and dared us to hit jump shots, and we've been struggling to shoot the ball the last few games. But yeah, from that point on, and then carrying over to Delaware, you know, just really turned the corner. So,
And just Nate, one last thing here. I mean, you made the point, they are up a game and a half in the standings because they have the tiebreaker for both Towson and Delaware, no matter what happens the rest of the way. But the remaining schedule is brutal. You've got William and Mary, who's not good, and they're at the deck, but it's a letdown spot. That's a trap game's trap game, if ever there was a trap game.
Yeah.
They're going to have to show up for that. Then they got three of the best teams in the conference. They got Elon, who's still in the RPI, a top 100 team. Mm-hmm. JMU, who I think there's a legit rift between the athletic departments at this point. I think there's a real bullseye on Drexel's back when it comes to JMU. And then at Towson to end the season. Like, that's a rough slate of games. Four really, really tough ones. So a game and a half lead, they're going to need it. I don't foresee them going undefeated there. But, you know, you may need to do better than 2-2, and that's going to be hard. That's going to be hard. This is not over yet.
Well, in the throw there too, I was looking at this weekend. I thought, okay, you know, two home games, you know, lower part of, but I think both of these, William Mary and Elon, have both won four straight. And granted, it's, you know, I think UNCW showed up for a few of them. And I mean, you mentioned their coach got fired last week too. But four wins in a row, and they're both battling it out in that middle part of the conference for seeding. So yeah, they're going to come in hungry. And again, I know the conference, you know, as far as getting at large, isn't going to get respect, but another thing this year that's been fun to watch, it's so competitive. There's no easy night. So
yeah, it's a conference that really did disappoint out of conference play, because you see these games, like that Drexel Delaware game was an NCAA tournament level game. Those were two teams playing really, really high level basketball. So you know that the kind of the teams in this conference are better than their rankings show. And I think you can say that for a lot of the teams in the top half of this conference. So yeah, again, not easy. And if they get the one seed, they'll have really earned it. And obviously great to have home court. You know, you want to see folks at the deck. But yeah, it's going to be a fun last couple of weeks for them. But certainly if you're Amy Mallon, I think you're getting in their face a little bit right now. You're not letting them enjoy this, because you got some tough games coming up.
Yeah. Well, looking forward to March. Way, yeah.
Elon is senior night. Again, not only is Elon a good team, but that's a senior night for our girls too. A big one with Hannah and the whole thing. So just a really tough setup.
Yeah. How about you? But I left this weekend feeling excited for March, and not just for the women, but for the men. You know, two straight wins is two straight wins. They're road wins. So let's see if we can carry the momentum into this weekend. So, all right. I was going to talk about, so that podcast, I don't know where Eric went, and he seemed to be the one who had the most, the strongest feelings. Eric, you there?
I think he's got some stuff at home he's got to worry about in a moment, so okay. That's all right.
So we'll table that. It would be like, you know, Eric Zomer appeared on an NPR podcast. To be honest with you, I thought I don't know if you guys listened to it. I mean, they basically just asked him, what's the definition of depression? And he laid it out as a clinical psychologist. I guess the only, and I said to my wife, they said everything that you'd expect. Like, you lose a game and, you know, how sports fans, it can cause depression, anxiety symptoms. And the only thing I walked away from that, I said to my wife, you know, one is would that have factored? I don't think it factored in any of his decisions. You know, okay, I don't want my athletes to have depression because they lose a tough game. I don't think that happened. But I will make the point, you know, again, this last weekend, you know, yeah, we drove down to Elon, and I learned this from you guys. You go on long road trips, but you go see Dale Earnhardt's museum. You go eat a massive banana split. You know, if we go down to DC, I'm already looking to go to the Smithsonian Museum, and there's some things that I want to see there. So it's like, you don't put all your eggs in the basketball basket. You have other things that you see. So that's what I took away from it. So, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. I know you said it's been a bit, but.
Yeah, well, certainly when you go to conference tournaments, and Bill and I think have really gotten good at this over the years, we certainly go for other things besides the basketball.
Yeah, for sure.
100%. But no, I mean, the cheap joke, the easy joke is that NPR had the whole nation a search. And when they needed an expert on losing in sports, they found Eric Sommer, right? I mean, so they didn't go for, you know, this was an article on who won the Super Bowl. But no, I mean, it's, I think he had a valid point. And the sermon that I really wanted to give here, if I had some more time to think it out, but it was just, I feel like the one thing is Drexel basketball fans, I don't think we've lost a lot of games, and certainly the at-large bids that the team didn't get over the years were a little soul-crushing right on all of us. And there are individual losses and stuff that I'm sure both of you guys remember. And it's not a great feeling. But for me, it's the community, right? It's I get fired up when I listen to that because I feel like he missed the point of it, which wasn't necessarily for us as fans the game so much as we had this great community at Drexel. Yeah, when that place is full, that place is rocking. That place is like it's memorable. It's great. You're part of something, and that's what I feel like we've really lost over the years. Mm-hmm. And I put that on him largely. I really do, and his leadership and the lack thereof. So, you know, he got me thinking on a different wavelength. But it's one of the reasons why I'm really happy we're doing this podcast, and again, why I hope we have more guests and more Drexel fans and everything else on, is because we're I think working to get that community back. And even if it's small right now, and even if it's grassroots, I'm really proud of this. I think, Nate, this is one of the greatest ideas. I'm really loving the format. The fact that guys like Battle will want to come in on it. It's not like when I was writing the blog, you know, it was an independent activity. And if somebody could guest write and hop in, and a lot of people did over the years, but it wasn't the same as this, right? So I really want to encourage the folks who are listening to A, share this with others, and B, come on. You know, the water's warm. We'd love to have you. And just talk with this group of people, because I think ultimately when this grows and when we get the DAC back, that's when we're really back, not just the winning, but when the kind of whole franchise is back, when everything's running, when we're winning and the stands are full and everything else, that's when I'll feel like, hey, Drexel's where it should be again.
Yeah.
And we got a ways to go, but I like this. I like this little bit that we're doing here. And so again, I just, you know, whether it's message boards, whether it's a Slack channel, whether it's here, keep that community going, keep talking about it with other people. And I think that's really what that podcast, those NPRs consider this the day after the Super Bowl for those who want to listen. But yeah, it got me going. It got me thinking a little bit.
Yeah. No, and I mentioned that when we talked to Robert Battle about, yeah, looking at the attendances from his senior year and seeing again, like the smallest was 1900 people. And now I'm looking at numbers like in the hundreds. So yeah, it's definitely changed. And now, one thing I'll share is, you know, so we're driving from Elon to Quantico Saturday night, which is later than I wanted to be. It's probably like 9:30, and we drove 95 past Richmond, and you're thinking of again all the trips we went on and the times down there and eating at Buzz and Ned's. You guys probably have more fun at the trips when I was down there with you. But even just going to the games, hanging out, watching a full, you know, 4 days, 4 games on a quarterfinal day with you guys, and seeing the bands and all that stuff, you just great memories. So. And I agree, Bill, thanks for joining us, you know, and whoever wants to come on. So, and anything, Bill, you want to add before we probably wrap up here, but anything else, any thoughts you wanted to share about anything, team, whatever we're talking about?
I mean, I think you guys covered it pretty well there at the end. It is all about this community. That's what makes Drexel special, I think, too. I know it's a small group, but, you know, we have access that we wouldn't usually have if you went to a bigger school, you know, and just the team bringing people together. Like I still see my college friends once a year, at least every year for the CAA tournament. So, you know, that's amazing that happens every year. That would, if we were just all like alumni, there's nothing really to bring you together. Like the basketball team brings you together. or sports in general really can, but in this case, it's basketball for us. So I think I encourage everyone, students now, alumni, whoever, you know, come back, watch the games, get involved, because it'll keep you connected to the school for, you know, years beyond after you graduate. So that's it.
Yeah. And Dan, and we'll talk, we'll sort this out too. I'm not opposed to guests, you know, but yeah, as long as I just want to make sure we keep that, our community first. I guess I'm snobby in a sense. We have a better community and I don't really give a damn what other people. So, but either way, so as long as we keep that in, I hope, you know, you said the CAA tournament, I don't know when I'm going to go down there, but you know, this was meant because of what's going on in the world, you know, to keep us together in some sense. So I want to make sure we hang on to that, and maybe we'll see it at a game here, Dan. I don't want to put pressure on you, but because quickly, I use a comment, just when you think it's safe to get back in the water, as I've been posting. I came into work today, and my boss, the medical director at our clinic, she has COVID. So it's like, just as you thought, okay, we're good, it's still out there, but we're headed in a good direction on that, and you know, we'll see how things unfold here. But anyway, all right. Anything else you guys wanted to throw out there?
Well, Nate, as a NASCAR enthusiast, I don't want to step on your toes, but when we talk about a Drexel community, I think about my old roommate and one of my best friends who's working for Trackhouse Racing. So his season got started on Sunday there. The 1-99 cars are Drexel cars this year, everybody. So I'm getting behind him and excited to see some races this year.
I meant to check in with him and make sure he found another job because I knew his team folded. So I'm glad. The 99 is a cool paint scheme. It's very colorful. I like it. So.
But same anyway, team, so. New owner, basically is the deal, I believe.
Yeah, so good. Okay, all right. Well, thank you for joining us, Eric. We're still seeing his wall, so I guess he's not coming back. But we'll see you guys next week. All right, have a good night.
Have a good night.